First Baptist Church of Redmond, July 11th, 2021. Guest speaker, Patrick Noury. Samuel.
Please rise and join me in reading 1 Samuel 12:24. Only fear the Lord and serve him in truth with all your heart. For consider what great things he has done for you. You may be seated. I will now have guest speaker Patrick Noury present the sermon for today.
Well, good morning. You may want to have a pen or a pencil write down the scripture references. We're going to kind of do a whirlwind trip through Samuel here. The psychologists tell us that we remember about 10% of what we hear, so I found that to be pretty much true. Some of us have exceptional memories, but if you're like me, I know that's not true, so I have to write down just about everything. So if you've got a pen or a pencil, that would be good to pull that out and record some of the passages that so you can go back and read them. I've been reading through the book of 1 Samuel for some time now. I make it my endeavor to kind of keep going through the scripture. So I'll finish one Bible and pick up another one, and I love to color code and mark my Bibles up. And it's been a continual stumbling block for most Muslims that I talk to, though, because they just think, well, how could you do that to a holy book? You know, well, it's a little different in our situation. It is a holy book, but God expects us to know and understand what's in it. And I find the best way for me is to color code and to underline, make notes, and so I finish one, and I start another one. So I'm going through the book of 1 Samuel, and a very interesting thing just really struck me this time. I've always read Samuel, just kind of read it through. It didn't seem to pertain to me much when I read it, and I know that we probably all as kids heard the story of David and Goliath, and that's a story we continue to teach little kids. And then when we get older, we kind of lose the relevancy of it. Well, how does that really apply to my situation and who I am and what I'm struggling with? And I think some insights I just picked up this time I don't think I've really seen before. But just to overview here, 1 Samuel is not a book about Samuel. I think the first portion was, and you certainly see what Samuel went through, and probably the biggest disappointment of his life, it seems, was concerned Saul. And Saul just was not a good follower of Christ, just wasn't. He just about every turn he disobeyed God. He would not, didn't seem to have his heart set on following what God said. And this, of course, during this time is when Israel rejected God as their king and kind of made him titular head of Israel. And I wonder sometimes whether that's really what we do as the church, is we have Christ as our king, we sing about him, we sing the verses, but he's really kind of titular head. The real heads are the guys and the gals who run the church. Those are the real heads. Those are the real leaders in the church. And I wonder sometimes whether we've really lost the spirit behind that of Christ as our king. What does that mean? How does that play out in our daily lives? Are we willing to follow him as opposed to the current thinking of the day? And so 1 Samuel really is about David's early years. It's a true story about David's early years. And it's also a story about Saul's rejection of God's values and David's steadfast adherence to God's values. What a contrast those two things are. And what a contrast in men. Saul was chosen because he seemed to be a man of valor. He had strength. He was taller than everybody else in Israel. I'm not sure what all that meant or how tall he was, but he certainly had more stature, and people seemed to look at him and say, now, if there's anybody that would be king here in Israel, that's the guy. That's the guy we want. And so he was anointed king, and God did the same thing to him that he did in David's early days. He filled him with the Spirit and gave him missions to accomplish. And Saul blew it right out of the gates. And you could see the sorrow in Samuel's life after that. But then David comes along, and he doesn't have the stature that Saul had. In fact, he was the youngest of Jesse's children, big, big family of strong, strapping boys. And if any of those guys could fulfill the role of king, certainly it would be them. But nope, God did not choose any of them. And Samuel asked him, well, is there anybody else? He said, yes, David. He's out taking care of the sheep. And when you see the description of David, he was a good-looking kid, but it's not somebody you would look at and be impressed by as far as stature. He was ruddy, it says, which means that he was kind of a little on the reddish side of things. And he was handsome. But you wanted somebody that was weathered, like Goliath. Now, Goliath was a true champion, wasn't he? Have you guys ever been around somebody who was over 6 feet, 6 foot tall, six inches tall? Have you ever been around somebody? There's a good friend of mine. I don't know if you've ever met him. His name is Dan Kreft. He's 7 feet. And I mean to tell you, this is big. This is tall. But Goliath was 9.5 feet tall by the one standard of cubit measurement. If you take another standard of cubit measurement, he was well over 10 feet tall. Now that, I would say, that would strike fear in the heart, and that's what he did to Israel. And he looked every bit of the part. Samuel didn't. And yet, when Jesse brought David in from the flock, the Lord spoke to Samuel and said, anoint him, he is the king. And you wonder, boy, does God purposely choose those who don't look like they've got a ghost of a chance? I mean, is that the model? And I don't think so. I think the standard, I think, comes, and you can see, really, David's reputation that he had gained. And what was spoken of him was that when the Lord said about David, I found a man after my own heart. And, you know, David had a lot of faults. He was, I think, typical of normal human beings. We do have a lot of faults. We're sinners. We were fallen. And consequently, we just have a lot of problems. But the one problem David did not seem to have, and that was a trust in God, an unwavering trust in God. And when he came one on an errand, I think it was just according to the way we would see it, we'd say, well, this is kind of by chance. Jesse sent David to seek out his brothers, take him some refreshments and things like that. They were on the line of battle, and Goliath had come down and challenged Israel to a fight, and everybody was quaking in their boots. And little old David comes, and he didn't know he was there. He didn't know what he was getting into at all. But he took the things down to his brothers. And it's kind of like he caught wind of this guy. How long has this guy been out here? How long has this guy been doing this? Um, he looked at the situation and he said, you know, how long is this going to go on? This guy who taunts the armies of God, this uncircumcised Philistine who taunts the armies of God. And I got to looking at that, and it, coming from the normal young kid, you'd say, that's pretty brash, you know, for him to say that. Does he really know what he's talking about? And, of course, he relates this to Saul. And Saul, again, sizes him up and says, look, you're young, you're inexperienced. What chance do you have against this guy? And again, he looked at the outward appearance. He looked at the appearance of man. He sized him up according to the way men would size people up. And I think it's a big challenge for us as believers. In fact, it's one of the biggest challenges we have to overcome, I believe. And that is measuring ourselves by ourselves or by the way the world judges. And if we don't think that we measure up, it actually affects our faith. It affects our trust. Well, if I were only different here, I could trust God better, or God could use me, or I could be better equipped, whatever it is. You can fill in the blank. It's almost limitless. But that is a huge challenge that we have to get over. Now, one of the ways David was trained, and I don't know whether he saw the relevance at the time, but this is what he related to Saul. When Saul told him, you don't stand a chance against this guy, David then relates an experience that he had while out tending the sheep. Now here, this is a pretty humiliating thing for David. He's the youngest kid, and he gets all the dirty work. He gets all the tough work. He was expected to take care of the sheep and run the errands for Saul, and he was expected to take care of the sheep and deliver stuff to his brothers. So it's a pretty humiliating role that he has. And yet he seems to be a pretty principled guy, and I think sometimes we miss this, is that the responsibility that he must have felt in taking care of the sheep for his father, his father's sheep. So he was there to take care of the sheep, and he took his responsibility pretty seriously. I'm reminded of the passage out of Philippians chapter 2, where it's very much the same for us when he says, so then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, this is Philippians 2, 12 through 15, just as you have always obeyed, and there's the same kind of principle, I think, where we're serving the master. It may not be in what we expected that service to look like. And I think the older you get, and, you know, I know that 40 years ago, over 40 years ago now, when I became a believer, I had certain expectations and images about what my life was going to look like. And they were far more exalted than what's really turned out to be the case. And so you think about that. And he says, just as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Now, there's the challenge of trust right there. It is God who is at work in you, both the willingness, the desire, the eagerness to serve him, and his good pleasure, or to work for his good pleasure. And even though our concepts change through the years of what it means to serve God, and for some we lose heart, don't we, because it's not turning out exactly like what we thought. And yet God, we have to believe God is at work in us, both the willing and the working for his good pleasure. That's been true for me for over 40 years now since I came to trust Christ. So God is at work. I've got to believe that. Otherwise, I'm left to figuring out things out according to my own ability. And most of us are not very impressive people. I mean, if you stack us up against some of the great people of Earth, most of us don't come close to that. I'm a historian. I read a lot of history. And I can tell you, oh, no, that's not me. I would not stack up against that person. But the one thing, and it's like David. David was really not impressive to his families. His brothers ridiculed him when he showed up on the front lines. What are you doing here? Are you here to cause trouble? I don't know, how many of you, some of you have come from large families. We have a couple of large families here. I would be surprised if the siblings didn't in some way have a little bit different perspective of each other than what the people around him would have. And I know in my family, it was the way. I was kind of the weakling in the family. All my brothers were athletic, and I wasn't. I was the musician in the family. And so I had to live that down going to high school. I said, are you going to be like your brothers here? No, I'm not. But we have to overcome. And again, this is a big challenge. I think this is the greatest challenge we have as the church today, is to trust God that he will fulfill his purpose for me. Regardless of what happens to me or the way I develop or what I accomplish or what great things I can muster. And this is where Saul was at. This is where most of Israel was at. They were so impressed when Saul was anointed king that most of Israel followed him. And they were very loyal to him. Even after Saul was killed, when David truly then began to rise to the throne, a lot of Israel fought against David. They were loyal to Saul. And it probably had a tough time figuring out how this guy is going to fulfill the job that Saul could not do. And yet David maintained this trust. One of the things I was very impressed by with the life of David here is that for the first few chapters after David is anointed king, things are really going well. I mean, he's really rising to stature and fame in Israel. And it said all the ladies would come out and, you know, they'd have their chant. Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s. You know, well, that did it for Saul right away. He set his mind on getting rid of David. But this is quite a reputation. And then all of a sudden, with one short meeting, shortly after that, it's in a few chapters, Saul instructs all his men, and he instructs Jonathan, you find David and you kill him. That was the dictum that went out. And from then on, for 16 months and 9 chapters, Saul pursued him, and David spent running and hiding and living in caves. A lot of people sometimes ask me, since I'm in geology, a lot of people ask me, what about cavemen? I said, well, there's been a lot of them through the years, including David. You know, David was a caveman. Yeah, he lived in caves for a good portion of his life and hiding out from Saul. And it's always impressed me, though, that David hung in there with God through all of that time. It looked real disappointing. And in fact, in 1 Samuel 27, in verse 1, this is kind of the culmination of this, right before Saul was killed by the Philistines. David said, or the passage reads, then David said to himself, he'd gotten to the point here where I think he began to lose hope. I don't know if you've ever been at that stage. It's several times in my own life where I've gotten to a point when it just looked like, boy, there's no hope here. And God then answers prayer, which is his typical way he operates, isn't it? He gets us right to the point of where we just about jump off the cliff, and then he seems to come through. And I've said, well, that's typically the way God operates with us as human beings through the years. And the account says, David said to himself, "Now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul." People were letting Saul know. They were traitors. They would let Saul know where David was hiding. Saul would surround him, and God would help him escape. That's very clear that was what's going on. But he said, "Now I will perish. I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than to escape into the land of the Philistines. Saul then will despair of searching for me anymore in all the territory of Israel, and I will escape from his hand." And it's that point where the real challenge of faith, I think, came for David. It looks like he just about got to the point where he gave up hope. And sure enough, when he went to the Philistines, Saul let him go. And it was shortly after that Saul was killed by the Philistines. And then I think David, then he gains kind of a fresh look at what God was really doing. And it's helped me through difficult times to maintain that trust where, where we continue to trust God to fulfill his purpose and to will and to work. It's God that is work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. That is a part of our salvation, by the way. That's one thing we've inherited in our salvation. And it's not up to us. Our job, just as you have obeyed, always obeyed, not in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out. Doesn't mean work for your salvation. It's work out. This is your salvation here. Now, carry it through. Work it out. And then he says in that next passage in Philippians chapter 2, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself." This attitude was present in Christ also. And that seems to be kind of the breaking point for our trust, where we figure it out that, wow, this Jesus lived that whole life. His whole, as God, the Creator, lived in this body where he was hated, he was ridiculed, he was insulted, he was assaulted, and yet it says he obeyed. He put himself in the position of a servant. He just simply obeyed. And that seems to be the real crux of the issue in trust. Because we're so geared in on what we can offer, what we can do, what we've attained, our great education or our great skills, whatever it is, they're just unlimited things that get in the way, I think, of trust, of just trusting God. And isn't that what faith is? Faith, the word faith is the noun, and it's the word trust. Believe is the verb form of that noun and means to trust what God has spoken. So it's a very simple, simple concept, but very difficult to carry out. And as I look through the significance of the story between David and Goliath, I see a broader application than just for a good story for children. And that is this. 1 Samuel 17, verses 32 to 33, it said, "David said to Saul, 'Let no man's heart fail on account of Goliath. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine.' And most people would just consider that to be, the guy's a real braggart. He doesn't know what the heck he's doing. But yet David seems to have grasped that important concept. Number one, God has a purpose and he's at work. And when he took the bear and the lion and killed them, attacked them, it said. When those two animals came in to get the sheep, David attacked them, took them and killed them. And I don't know whether it occurred to him at the time that God was really in this. I think he, most likely, my opinion is that he grew into that, realizing, and probably here was the capstone. Just as God delivered the sheep and my life from two animals that were more powerful than me. I don't know whether you'd get into the ring with a lion and a bear. I lead tours to Yellowstone every year, and I just keep praying we do not run into a grizzly bear. those are ferocious bears. They can outrun you. You cannot outrun a grizzly bear. And they do a fairly good job. When you climb the tree, think you're safe, they know exactly what to do. It just seems instinct for them to knock this tree over and get you. Now, if you imagine this, where David took them by the mane and killed them, and then sometime, maybe it was then, I don't know, I tend to think that it was sometime later, it dawned on him that God was at work. David was principled. He was there. He wasn't a grumbler or a complainer, but he did wholeheartedly the things he knew to be right at that particular time. He did them. He watched his father's sheep. Most of us would be sitting there grumbling. Yeah, I don't want to do this menial job. This is just, and I'm better than this, or it's my right, you know, this kind of thing. And we get to this kind of thinking, and it destroys trust. It destroys faith, because we're missing an opportunity to fulfill the purpose of God and then to see God work as a result. And this is what David was learning in this whole time. Now, if you think about Goliath again, I told you he was 9.5 feet tall. That was the minimum. You know, it's, if you use the different cubit, he was 10.5 feet tall. But 9.5 feet tall, the total weight of his armor. You know, we read through those passages and we don't bother to take a calculator and figure out what shekel means. You know, it was, you know, so many shekels of silver. And so we read beyond. It doesn't connect with this. But if you do some multiplication, you figure out his armor, all of his armor weighed over 200 pounds. Now, when was the last time some of you guys lifted 200 pounds and then walked with it? I'll tell you, I have arthritis real bad in my knees, my back, and it is work picking up even 50 pounds. I can tell you this much. I don't know if I would qualify working for UPS at this point. Don't you have to have a certain minimum amount that you have to be able to lift in order to work for the company? I just can't do that anymore. I used to be able to climb up the ladder, which I did roofing a lot, and I'd carry these big bundles of shingles on my shoulder, and I'd climb the ladder, dump them on, go back down, get on, until the roof was ready to shingle. I did that. I couldn't even dream of doing that today. But here you got a guy, 200 pounds of armor. His bronze helmet alone weighed 125 pounds. Now, this is a big guy, pretty impressive. And if there's anybody who can be a champion for the Philistines, it would be Goliath. In high school, my brother threw the discus and the shot put. And so this thing in high school, you get out there with this big 12-pound shot. It's a big ball of lead is what it is. And you take this thing and you get your, you know, you get your balance going and your strength or your oomph, whatever you're going to do to put that thing out there. And then you let it fly. And I was in track. I ran some of the dashes. And so when the shot put area was not being used, we'd get out there and see how far we could throw that thing. And listen, 12 pounds is heavy. Next time you go to the grocery store, pick up a bag of 10-pound, you know, the 10-pound bag of potatoes and put that on your shoulder and, you know, try doing, don't throw it, but do this and see. That's heavy. And I think that, yeah, I looked this up. The high school indoor record for throwing the 12-pound shot is 77 feet. Now that's quite a distance, but even that, when you think about Goliath's spear, the head of his spear was 15 pounds. And I'm sure he could throw that thing further than 77 feet. A javelin, you had to be able to throw it. In fact, the javelin today in competition, what is it, 125, 150 feet, something like that, 200 feet? You have to hurl that thing out there. Otherwise, the spear is ineffective. That's why you use a spear, is to get it out there away from swords and everything else. It's one of your offensive weapons. Goliath was also a liar. Now, this is one of the things we have to face today. And it's getting worse in our culture. We are up against a pack of lies and liars. Vicki and I were talking about this morning, where the whole beginning of racism in our country and in European civilization really began with evolution. The Europeans, Darwin believed this, that those who were of color were inferior to the European race, they called them. And today it's become just the opposite. It's the Christians who believe in this Genesis garbage who are the racists, because their endeavor is to link back their whiteness to white Adam. Now, this is what's being told. Now, of course, there's a whole lot of fallacy behind that. I mean, number one, they've got the history all wrong. I do a lot of reading of history, and I can't find that anywhere in the books. But this is being turned around. Everything is being turned around. And so we're up against those who are much stronger than we are, and we're up against a lot of lies. One of the biggest lies that Goliath told, and I think people just read over this, when they challenged Israel, he said, look, just send out one man, send out your champion, and if he can beat me and kill me, we will become your servants. But if I kill him, you'll become our servants. And yet when David went out there and killed him, did the Philistines become Israel's servants? No, they went on. And in fact, the Philistines didn't disappear until the Romans, the Romans finally got in there. They just kind of seemed to vanish. But David heard all of this. He saw all of this, and yet it didn't seem to faze him. He was there to serve the purpose of God. And he calls Goliath this uncircumcised Philistine who taunts the armies of God. And I think that's embedded in that is a realization that God has a purpose. You know, one of the things that God had commanded Joshua to do and all of Israel was to exterminate all of the foreign people that occupied the land. Then it was called the land of Canaan. And there were the Canaanite, all the divisions of the Canaanites, and then there were others who were related to Canaan. One of those was the Philistines. And they were to get rid of all of these people. Well, Israel was not successful in that. And the Philistines got a foothold, and there they remain all throughout the days of the kings. So almost, 400 years? They just remained there. And I think David David realized this because later you see, as Saul and the Philistines are fighting, David's down over here in some different corners of the Promised Land, eradicating these foreign tribes. He realized what the purpose of God was. And when he called Goliath this uncircumcised Philistine, it wasn't just a term of derision. Circumcision meant something to the good Hebrew. They understood by circumcision, it wasn't just a physical thing. Most of the nations in those days viewed that practice as just being very abhorrent. They refused to be involved with that. Today, it's not a big deal. But circumcision meant this, that Israel was God's people, and they were to devote themselves to fulfilling God's purpose, his plan, his way. And so when he called Goliath an uncircumcised Philistine, it wasn't just the fact that he was resisting that whole idea, but it was the fact that the Philistines would not submit themselves to the true God. What do we have going on today in our own culture? There is a war about who we're going to submit to. Are we going to submit to God and his ways, or are we going to submit to the culture around us? And that's the uncircumcised portion that he talks about here with Goliath, that uncircumcised Philistine. And who taunts the armies of God. Boy, I don't know how many times you've encountered this, but I'll tell you, it's getting harder and harder to put up with some of the stuff that's being said about Christians and Christianity. And I have to keep reminding myself, we serve the purpose of God. This is not this isn't when you do like the Crusades did, which was pick up sword and, or even the Reformation. You know, there were some of the reformers that carried around a big sword. Zwingli, I think, was one of them, who carried around a big sword, and it was to strike the heathen. You know, this went on during the Reformation. It was a very bloody time. It wasn't just a debate over religious things. It was a very bloody time. And so he didn't flinch, and this is the thing that amazes me. Here he was, he had been braggadocious, and now he went out to meet Goliath. At that point, if there was any spirit left in me, I would have just said, you know, I think I got this wrong, let me exit here. It's just my youth, right? It's my youth, it's my inexperience talking. And he didn't. He related it to fulfilling God's purpose. Some of it was just simply obeying his father and taking care and doing, honoring his father. That was part of the Ten Commandments, you know, honor your mother and your father. And David was busy doing it. It was within that whole context that God delivered him in the field. And all he did was just apply that to this situation. And I think that's why he didn't flinch. He related it to the experiences that he had had tending the sheep. And so when he faced Goliath, it was probably, I'm not saying there wasn't a struggle, but in that struggle, he was able to remind himself that this is God's purpose, an uncircumcised Philistine who's taunting the armies of God. God will deliver me. That's what he told Saul. Saul didn't know what else to say to that. Okay, go ahead and go, and may God be with you. Well, that was the whole point. David wouldn't have done it if God wasn't with him. And really, I think this is the number one fight that we all have as believers as we continue to live our Christian lives. It's not a quest to be great in the things of God. We don't do that. God is the one who does that. It's he that is at work in us, both to will and to work for his good pleasure, not our own. And it seems like that is one of the biggest challenges we've got to realize. Timothy, before Paul was executed by Rome, he wrote a couple of letters to Timothy. And in both letters, this is said two or three times, this simple idea, fight the good fight of faith. Fight the good fight of trusting what God has spoken, believing that he will carry out his purpose and his plan. And of course, we in our lives here, it's a big question. We always ask ourselves, what is God? Am I about doing God's work and his plan? Abraham Lincoln is quoted during the Civil War, and Seward approached him. And when things were going real bad for the Union, Seward would say, man, I wonder which side God is on here. And Lincoln stopped him short and said, well, that's not what I think about. What I think about is, are we on God's side? Who is on God's side? Are we on God's side? And I think that's a good question we should always be asking is, am I really on God's side? But to realize that God is at work, both to will and to work for his good pleasure, that to me is the most difficult fight I think I wrestle with, is constantly getting up morning after morning after morning and fighting that good fight of faith and letting God take care of the rest. That to me is the challenge that I think we as the church face today. So some lessons I think from 1 Samuel and really how they relate to us today, there you go. And I was so glad to be going through 1 Samuel again. Now I'm about ready to start on 2 Samuel with the latter portion of David's life. And it's during that tough, tough period of rebellion in the ranks of his family and adultery and everything else that came his way, God, you know, really reminds that through the prophet, this is a man that is after my heart. You imagine that? We wouldn't do that today. We'd disqualify him. We have done that with people who are genuinely trying to serve God with all their heart, and we condemn them because of faults that we see. Let me tell you, I had a very good mentor as a young Christian, and he would say, listen, don't be careful of condemning others. We all have enough heresy in us to sink a battleship. And that, I still remember that today, and that always reminds me, you know, yeah, all of us have a lot of faults. So fight the good fight of faith.